This is he, this is Ren. This program is Mideast Madness, coming to you from Free Radio Santa Cruz, streaming live at freakradio.org, broadcasting on 101.3 FM. Shortly, I'll give you the phone numbers to the studio. Shalom Aleichem. Salam Aleikum. In the name of peace and justice, on behalf of the Palestine-Israel Action Committee, sometimes, sort of, which is part of Santa Cruz's own Resource Center for Nonviolence, greetings to you. My name is Lawrence Afif Tawil, though many know me as Ren. Larry will do in a pinch. I introduce myself as a California native from just over the hill. Went to Campbell High School and West Valley Junior College. Yet, perhaps the most pertinent thing in regards to this airtime is that my father was a Palestinian Arab of Jerusalem, a Christian Arab who found himself displaced by the events of May 1948, having lost all his possessions and the two businesses he and his brother owned back in Jerusalem and Haifa. And he could not return to his home and homeland. That's where I'm coming from. I am an American Palestinian Arab. I guess that would be American Daesh or hyphen Palestinian slash Arab. I want to remind everyone to boycott SodaStream. Now, SodaStream is an appliance that makes fizzy, sparkling drinks at home. Don't get too excited because it's manufactured in the West Bank Mishor Edomin Industrial Park in the Ma'ale Adumin settlement. Now, that is a Israeli Jewish settlement on Palestinian land, which they stole. Products made in Israeli West Bank settlements are illegally seized Palestinian land, water, and minerals. Exploitation of natural resources in occupied territories is not allowed by international law. Moreover, the Palestinian people don't receive any profits from products made in occupied territories using Palestinian resources. In the name of human rights, boycott SodaStream. Guess what tomorrow is, folks? Tomorrow, November 6, 2012, is general election, USA, where we get to vote for Tweedledum and Tweedledee, Tweedledum or Tweedledee. I certainly have my problems with our current president. There's no way in Hades that a Libertarian or Peace or Justice Party candidate is going to make more than 1%. Oh, maybe 5% on the ballot, because our electoral system is all screwed up. We need to see about getting rid of the Electoral College and going to a strictly proportional vote basis. In the meantime, amidst all my complaints, which are pretty generic, amongst like-minded people at this point in time, I'm going to particularly badmouth the Republicans and their presidential nominee, Mitchell Romney. I always presumed the Mitt was short for Mitchell. I could be full of it. Now, this is all stuff I've read on the air before. But seeing as tomorrow being what tomorrow is going to be, I'm going to read them all again. Okay. Oh, man, I wish I had that. Okay. Let's talk about the Republican Party, American Republican Party. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee is appalled at the Republican Party's continued spread of xenophobia, hate, and ignorance. Washington, D.C., July 31 of this year. And this can be found on the Anti-Discrimination Committee's website. Not to be confused with the Anti-Defamation League. That's something different altogether. This is www.adc.org. Anti-Discrimination Committee. July 31st, the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, ADC, is appalled at the continued bigotry and racism coming from factions from within the Republican Party, including the presumptive Republican presidential nominee, Governor Willard Mitt Romney. Okay, so it's Willard first and Mitt's middle name. Governor Willard Mitt Romney, former governor of the state of Michigan. On a recent trip to Israel, Romney directed racist and derogatory comments towards Palestinians. Romney's actions are in line with the xenophobic nature exhibited by factions from within the Republican Party over the past few election cycles. The failure of the leadership within the Republican Party to eliminate xenophobia from their platform is one of the single biggest reasons the party is losing support amongst minority groups such as Arab Americans. The recent actions of factions from within the Republican Party go against the basic and fundamental foundations which make this country great by continuing to pander to hate mongers, racists, and bigots. The Republican Party is going down a path that is not only damaging to the party, but will also prove damaging to the nation. During a speech, Romney spewed, quote, "As you come here and you see the GDP per capita, for instance, in Israel, which is about $21,000, and you compare that with the GDP per capita just across the areas managed by the Palestinian Authority, which is more like $10,000 per capita, you notice a dramatic, stark difference in economic vitality. If you could learn anything from the economic history of the world, it's this. Culture makes all the difference." End quote. Romney also said, and I quote, "And as I come here and I look out over this city and consider the accomplishments of the people of this nation, I recognize the power of at least culture and a few other things." End quote. His words indicate that the Palestinian culture is the, quote, difference. to which the extreme economic disparity can be attributed. His comments fail to recognize the decades-long hold Israel has had on the West Bank and Gaza and the impact the illegal occupation has had on the economy and people of Palestine. The Israeli government continues to control access to Gaza despite their 2005 withdrawal from that area. And has been imposing a debilitating border blockade since Hamas seized the territory in 2007. Let me cut in here. I'm not sure what all they're referring to when they say Hamas seized the territory. They did win the election and defeated Fatah, which is the current party in charge of the West Bank within the Palestinian Authority. The Hamas won the election, and then there was a very short civil war. My understanding is that members of the Fatah government, previous Fatah government, were not relinquishing control, so there was fighting and there was killing, fratricidal killing. So according to this, Hamas seized the territory in 2007. Continuing further, Palestinians have an extremely limited self-rule over the West Bank, as all border crossings and therefore overall control of the area lies in Israeli hands. And then they underline this. These are the facts to which the economic disparity should be attributed. During the same speech, Romney promised to move the U.S. Embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This comment ignores the sensitive nature of Jerusalem and completely disregards the Palestinians' claim to the eastern sector of the city. Earlier this month, Republican Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota, who failed in her bid to be the Republican presidential nominee, alleged that State Department Deputy Chief of Staff Huma Abedin has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. Bachmann and her cronies used a strong imagination and no reasoning at all to come to their conclusion. The allegations are another example of the use of fear for political gain. While not on a witch hunt and making a mockery of the U.S. House of Representatives, Bachmann and her husband run Bachmann and Associates, a counseling service which attempts to, underline, transform homosexuals into heterosexuals through counseling. So, oh, I see. When they are not on a witch hunt and making a mockery of the U.S. House of Representatives, Bachmann and her husband run Bachmann and Associates, a counseling service which attempts to transform homosexuals into heterosexuals through counseling. All right, perhaps that's neither here nor there, but let's continue. It must be pointed out that voices of reason from within the Republican Party stood up to Ms. Bachmann and made it clear that there is no room for such crusades in the American political system. Longtime Senator John McCain of Arizona blasted Bachmann and her tactics on the Senate floor. A number of leaders from within the party, including Representative Mike Rogers of Michigan, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and Speaker of the House John Boehner, also stood up against Bachmann and her antics. Mitt Romney was not one of those voices. In fact, John Bolton, one of Romney's foreign policy advisors, defended Bachmann. Newt Gingrich, another Romney aide, during his failed bid for the Republican nomination, made a simplistic and strange assertion that the Palestinians are an, quote, invented people, end quote. Another Romney foreign policy advisor, Waleed Fares, is a well-known Islamophobe who served as a high-ranking official in the, quote, Lebanese Front, a sectarian religious militia responsible for massacres during Lebanon's brutal 15-year civil war. He was also part of the Guardians of Cedar militia, a group with the slogan, "Kill a Palestinian and you shall enter heaven." Romney himself has yet to distance himself from such political rhetoric. Rather, he has continued to engage in shameful tactics and surrounds himself with extremists, bigots, and racists. Arab Americans, along with minority communities across the country, are deeply troubled and concerned about the racist sentiments coming from within the Republican Party and call on its leaders, such as Mitt Romney, to take a stand against such tactics and distance themselves from forces of hate in this country. Completing the article now. Now more than ever, the United States must unify on all fronts. It is only by working together that we will move this country forward. The voices of hate, bigotry, and xenophobia must not be given a platform in politics. And the onus is on the leaders of the Republican Party to eliminate the hate from their platform and their lexicon. A few notes about ADC. The American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee, ADC, which is nonprofit, non-sectarian, and nonpartisan, is the largest grassroots Arab American civil rights and civil liberties organization in the United States. It was founded in 1980 by former Senator James Obresk. ADC is a national network of chapters and members in all 50 states. Okay. That was, of course, charges directed specifically to the American Republican Political Party. Forgive me while I treat myself to a refreshing beverage. Okay, here's some more stuff about Republicans and the Israelis. FP50 inadvertently reveals Israel's dominance of GOP. Now, GOP stands for Grand Old Party. It is a venerable, sentimental nickname of the Republican Party. FP50 inadvertently reveals Israel's dominance of GOP, the passionate attachment. This was forwarded to me by someone who added this before the beginning of the article. If you ever wonder why the U.S. government is so blindly and overwhelmingly biased in favor of Israel, often in abandonment of our own national interests and values, you may find this enlightening. Thank you, Sue. And this is just from, something entitled ThePassionateAttachment.com. The Passionate Attachment by Maud Okatel. That's my very crude attempt to pronounce Irish Gaelic. I'll try it again. The Passionate Attachment by Maud Okatel. August 31 of this year. Foreign Policy magazine has compiled a list of the 50 Republicans who have the greatest influence on the GOP's foreign policy. Quote, "Politics is mostly about people, and nowhere is that more true than when it comes to foreign policy," explains Foreign Policy, the magazine Foreign Policy, in its introduction. With the U.S. presidential election looming, again, this was written the last day of August of this year, the magazine offers, quote, to peel back the curtain on this rarefied part of the establishment, end quote, to better inform American voters about, quote, the advisors who will determine the country's course in the world, end quote, in the event that they elect Mitt Romney. The FP50, it says, are all GOP partisans from the different ideological traditions, namely realism, neoconservatism, and, quote, even isolationism, that are, quote, currently fighting for the soul of their party's foreign policy. A cursory look at the list, however, shows that a far more influential ideological tradition, Zionism, holds sway over the Republican Party. I'm putting this document down now. Let me give you the phone numbers. Phone numbers directly to the studio here at Free Radio Santa Cruz in Santa Cruz County, California, USA. Area code 831-427-3772. Again, 831-427-3772. Also, by way of area code 831 is our second studio line, 469-3119. 469-3119. You may call me at any point during my dissertations here. And we're back! Where was I? A cursory look at the list, however, shows that a far more influential ideological tradition, Zionism, holds sway over the Republican Party. Although only about 20% of American Jews supported the GOP in 2008, the FP50 features as many as 20 Jewish Partisans of Israel, including Weekly Standard editor William Kristol, in position number 2 of the FP50. Obviously, at this point, it's obvious that FP50 refers to Foreign Policy Magazine's 50 Republicans who have the greatest influence on GOP's foreign policy. So we have Weekly Standard editor William Kristol in position number 2, Brookings Institution senior fellow Robert Kagan, position number 4, and casino mogul and mega donor Sheldon Adelson, position number 9, who make its top 10 most powerful Republicans on foreign policy. Also at number 8 is Ileana Rose Leitinen, the stridently pro-Israel chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee, whose maternal grandfather was a, quote, pillar of Cuba's Jewish community who helped found several synagogues there. More importantly, several of the most passionate Israel partisans are close advisors to the Romney team, including Kagan, that's Robert Kagan, Dan Senor, position number 13, Dov Zakheim, 27, Elliot Cohen, 29, and Elliot, with two L's, Abrams. Elliot Abrams, position number 35. Moreover, the careers of many of the non-Jewish individuals on foreign policy's list have been inextricably linked to their staunch support of the Jewish state. Their careers, folks. Topping the FP50 is Senator John McCain, who not only continues the family tradition of covering up Israel's deliberate June 8, 1967 attack on the USS Liberty, United States Naval Intelligence Vessel, but invariably leads the call in unison with Senator Joe Lieberman for U.S. intervention in countries surrounding the Jewish state. At number 26 is Senator Mark Kirk. Quote, the Israel lobby's favorite senator, whose office this year served as a conduit for an Israeli initiative to redefine Palestinian refugees out of existence. And coming in 46th place is John Hagee. John Hagee, H-A-G-E-E, the founder and chairman of Christians United for Israel, which, as FP points out, has done more than just about any other organization to make Israel a defining foreign policy issue for evangelical Christians in the United States. Indeed, out of the 50 Republicans who have the greatest influence on the GOP's foreign policy, Congressman Ron Paul, who along with his son Senator Rand Paul is ranked number 25, appears to be one of the very few who could be relied upon to put U.S. interests ahead of Israel's. Yet, foreign policy, a division of the pro-Israel Washington Post, never explicitly refers to the decisive and potentially catastrophic influence Tel Aviv would have over a Romney administration. However, those familiar with the operations of the Israel lobby know that, as the magazine puts it, quote, "The relentless lobbying and insider machinations of surprisingly few people can often end up defining the foreign policy of entire administrations," end quote. Article entitled "The Passionate Attachment," rather short, by Made Okatel. Let me just spell that in case I'm really butchering the name badly. M-A-I-D-H-C is the first name. Again, this is Irish Gaelic. At least I believe it's Irish Gaelic or Gaelic. Middle initial, well, okay, it says O with a kind of something that resembles an accent mark above it. Capital C-A-T-H-A-I-L. So I don't know if it's Made Okatel or Made Okatel. But hey, if you want to correct my pronunciation, by all means, call us here at 831-427-3772 or 831-469-3119. Come on, people. I know someone among the thousands and thousands of fans that I have will call in to correct my Irish Gaelic pronunciation or tell me to stuff it, to agree with me or simply correct a mistake I may have made. I mentioned Sheldon. Oh, now I'm losing. You heard me mention Sheldon Adelson a little bit ago. This is from David Axelrod, who works with the re-elect Barack Obama campaign. Sheldon Adelson, the conservative billionaire Las Vegas casino owner, has pledged to give up to $100 million, whatever it takes, to defeat Barack Obama. "We know it's not out of love for Mitt Romney, so why part with so much money?" Well, as President Clinton reminded us last week, sometimes the answer is as simple as arithmetic. So let's do the math. According to a new report from the Center for American Progress Action Fund, Adelson could see up to $2 billion, billion with a B, in savings under Mitt Romney's tax plan versus the president's plan. That's how much Romney's policies would favor millionaires and billionaires. This dispatch continues. "If Mitt Romney wins, $2 billion more for Adelson. If Barack Obama wins, millions and billions pay their fair share." And once again, folks, I am not officially with the Obama-Biden team or the re-election campaign. I'm just reading this, folks. It's a highly cynical but straightforward calculation. Here's how it would work for Adelson on a Romney-Ryan administration. Romney would keep in place the Bush tax cuts and cut Adelson's income taxes by an additional 20%. Adelson savings, $1.5 million per year on income he earns as chief executive officer. Romney's plan eliminates taxes on foreign profits like the ones Adelson makes on his Asian casinos. Adelson savings, $1.2 billion U.S. dollars. Romney's plan maintains the current low tax rate on dividends. Adelson savings, $120 million per year. Romney's plan removes the estate tax. Adelson heirs save $8.9 billion. This piece of paper ends with a couple of sentences. I honestly can't think of a more straightforward contrast in this election. We don't have Sheldon Adelson, and with all due respect, we don't want him. Written by David Axelrod. September 14, 2012. And let me just add, in an article I read once, Sheldon Adelson, at one of his many appearances and speeches at Jewish American functions, Adelson pronounced, this is quoting roughly, "You only have to look at history to study history in order to realize that Palestinians have no rightful claim over the land they live in." Quote, unquote. That's the way Mr. Adelson thinks. Folks, you know, it's occurred to me that despite the thousands of listeners we have to the show every week, the reason why no one ever calls in might have something to do with your pro-Israel views or the fact that you are a Jew and for whatever reason you feel that what I have to say is not significant enough to respond to. It occurs to me that if you are Jewish, if you are an American Jew, an Israeli Jew in particular, You don't want to engage in a conversation with me because you feel that you don't want to give me the attention. Perhaps you believe that if no one calls in, I will go away. I assure you that is not the case. Wren will stay right here with Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 on the FM dial, streaming live from freakradio.org. Please call me. Aside from my inherent loneliness and tremendous insecurity, I wouldn't mind making the show a little more colorful with your participation. Once again, the phone lines here are 831-427-3772, 469-3119. You only have to dial one of those unless you get a busy signal, which I don't think is going to happen anytime soon. And by the way, Freak Radio Santa Cruz desperately needs donations, as you can imagine. Contribute as often and as little or as much as you can. Even a token amount will be deeply appreciated. Dues from the programmer, such as myself, are largely what secures the continued existence of this radio service, internet and broadcasted radio service. Please send your donations to FRSC, that's for Free Radio Santa Cruz, P.O. Box 7811-95061, Santa Cruz, California. Again, that's FRSC, Post Office Box 7811, Santa Cruz, S-A-N-T-A, second word, C-R-U-Z, California, zip 95061. Phone lines still have a big red glaring light on them, which means they're open. Doesn't mean they're not working. It means they are open, waiting for calls. Let's talk a little bit more about Republican nominee Romney. This is by Mitchell Cohen. He is the author of a book entitled Zion and State, Nation, Class, and the Shaping of Modern Israel. And for those of you who simply don't know, Cohen, to me, sounds like a Jewish name, Mitchell Cohen. Entitled Mitt, Bibi, and Sheldon, The Wrong Way. July 27. Mitt Romney's trip to Israel and Sheldon Adelson's campaign against President Obama are just the latest of many attempts to pry American Jews from the Democrats. Neocons, old cons, and just plain con-cons have been at it for decades with little success. Now they promote a particularly unfortunate linkage between bad American politics and bad Israeli politics. In the meantime, I'm trying to understand what this word is. In the meantime, Kant churns out to a drumbeat the administration is anti-Israel. Maybe I should be reading that. In the meantime, Chant churns out to a drumbeat the administration is anti-Israel. Continuing, this comprises only part of the story. The other part? It is time to talk straight about it. Israelis and their American friends need to wake up. Nothing in Israel's past is quite like Benjamin Netanyahu's government when it comes to alienating sympathizers abroad. The Jewish state faces serious strategic predicaments, and Bibi, as the prime minister is known, seems bent on being the great squanderer of Israeli history, squandering bipartisan friendship for Israel for the sake of right-wing agendas. A key aspect of Netanyahu's two terms in office, it is unclear which ought to be called worse, his first in the 1990s or the current one, has been attempts to blur real Israeli security interests into ultra-nationalist mythologies that are irrelevant to security but represent traditional aspirations of his Likud party in Israel. Otherwise, how to explain a willingness to build more settlements beyond the Green Line, the 1967 borders, just when the Jewish state needs expansive support in the U.S. and Europe to face a threatening nuclearizing Iran? Not to mention other legitimate causes for Israeli nervousness. A Muslim brother is Egypt's president. Syrian uncertainties. Worries about Jordan. Missile-laden Hezbollah in Lebanon. Hamas, the Palestinian version of the Muslim Brotherhood in Gaza. A Sinai Peninsula that has turned into dangerous territory. The breakdown of Israel's alliance with Turkey. Exactly why in this strategic setting should settling the Jewish equivalent of Salafists in the West Bank be a priority, with American fundamentalists cheering them on? Why in these circumstances should it be a priority to coddle ultra-Orthodox Jews within Israel proper, allowing them to dodge responsibilities of citizenship? See, Netanyahu's national unity government just fell apart over drafting devout young Jews who believe, apparently, that lives of secular Israelis should be risked to enable them to study religious texts. I'm going to read that again just so I understand it. Netanyahu's national unity government just fell apart over drafting devout young Jews who believe, apparently, that lives of secular Israelis should be risked to enable them to study religious texts. I see. So the religious Jews, ultra-Orthodox, should be spared the risk of being killed in war. David Ben-Gurion, Israel's founding prime minister and leader of a social democratic party, once stated that the chief priority of a prime minister is to set priorities. Those who apologize for Netanyahu and his government ought to think hard about that, as they think they might consider some other things. Avigdor Lieberman, Bibi's foreign minister, is a nationalist extremist who demands loyalty oaths of citizens and is barely presentable to much of the outside world, especially not to liberal Democrats. None other than Bibi fostered his political rise. That's talking about Avigdor Lieberman, or perhaps Avigdor Lieberman. Think back to the great Mideast crisis of May, June 1967. Compare Lieberman's posturing to the persuasive intelligence of the Israeli Labor Party's foreign minister, Abba Eban, then, and you'll know what I mean. The list goes on. Netanyahu's defense minister, Ehud Barak, former prime minister of Israel himself, has been mired in political and managerial problems in his own ministry and broke up his own party, Labor, on behalf of his career. Netanyahu's interior minister was unprepared to handle massive forest fires not long ago, a matter with implications if there is conflict with Iran. Netanyahu's finance minister pursues policies that move Israel further and further away from social egalitarianism. Once a principle widely praised characteristic of its society. The shift began decades ago, but was also ushered along by Bibi when he was a finance minister inspired by Milton Friedman-esque ideas. We have just enough time to finish this article. I know it's very intellectual sounding, and obviously the details of this dispatch here demands a certain knowledge of Israeli government procedures and habits, shall we say. Please bear with me. Is it any wonder that anti-Zionists, especially in parts of the left, are having a field day with boycott Israel campaigns? Netanyahu's government is their best ally in PR wars. Don't be misled. The boycott, divestment, sanctions, or BDS movement fortifies Netanyahu and hurts Israeli doves, according to Mitchell Cohen here. Who knows how many votes Israeli right-wingers might garner in the country's next elections. They will come soon. If they have a campaign ad showing a BDS advocate explaining with one deceptive analogy after another that Israel is, has always been and will always be, the devil incarnate, the original sinner of world history, and the new South Africa rolled into one. Could blacks vote in apartheid South Africa? No. Can Israeli Arabs vote in Israeli elections? Yes. Could blacks denounce apartheid on the floor of South Africa's parliament? No. Do Arab members of the Israeli parliament, they tend to identify as Palestinian Israelis, skewer their government, indeed the very idea of a Jewish state, regularly on the floor of Israel's parliament? Yes. There is legitimate criticism of Israel's occupation of the West Bank. There is legitimate criticism of discrimination within Israel. Anti-Zionist McCarthyism, however, is something else altogether. policies of particular Israeli governments in the moral and political justification of the Jewish state are also two radically different things. And so here comes Mitt Romney to Jerusalem while Sheldon Adelson dishes out dollars for attack ads in the latest phase of, quote, get Jews to support Republicans. Why should they support them? Because Romney salutes whatever Netanyahu does wrong? Because Netanyahu sympathizes with Romney's economic worldview, the casino capitalism that has already proven bad for both the U.S. and Israel? Romney has blown smoke in America's economic woes, which resulted more than anything from his own party's policies and the Bush years. Netanyahu blows smoke at his country's quandaries, which are not due solely to events in the Arab world or anti-Semitism, although both these factors are real and critical, and parts of the left, animated by anti-Zionist obsessions, blow their own smoke in denying them. Let's finish this up here. It's time for some balance. American support for Israel is, has been, and ought to be bipartisan. There are very good American reasons for it in the past, and there are very good American reasons for it in the future. They are not found in election time pandering. They do not include entwining the priorities of an incompetent, ideologically driven right-wing Israeli leadership with those of a Republican presidential candidate whose social and economic worldview put into practice would bring more inequality to the United States along with more plutocracy, more social unfairness, and more intolerance. There are many golden calf awards to be handed out these days. Mitchell Cohen is former co-editor of Dissent magazine and professor of political science at Bernard Baruch College and the Graduate School of the City University of New York. Okay, well, obviously, this is the viewpoint of a Zionist who still has the courage to be, to say it like it is and be critical of the Israeli government and of Israeli society. But he is making a slightly loose thread tying Mitt Romney, Bibi Netanyahu, and Sheldon Adelson in that selection. You know, we got 3 minutes left here, folks. At least according to Free Radio's schedule here in Santa Cruz County, California. Call me if you like. I will stay over a reasonable number of minutes if anyone calls in. And again, I'll never know the reasons why so many dozens, hundreds of you do not call in unless you call in. Turn this into a dialogue. I've already been cited by an ardent Zionist who lives in the county here in the Santa Cruz Sentinel newspaper as an anti-Semite. I am not an anti-Semite. I do not consider myself anti-Semitic. I am indeed a Semite because my father was an Arab, and Arabs are Semites too. But as I have been slandered, libeled as such in the newspaper, well, it just doesn't give me much opportunity for facing those charges head on if people don't listen. Well, thank you again. This has been Mideast Madness with Ren Tawil. Every Monday at 4 p.m., 55 minutes of Mideast Madness, 101.3 FM, streaming live on freakradio.org. Till next week, thanks again.